Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mind Shifters Radio with the Forgiveness Doctor, Dr. Michael Rice. I'm Jeannie Rice, your co-host. We also have co-hosts Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet. We will share with you the wisdom of the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We offer tools and support 5 days a week. We will support you in building a solid foundation within yourself to live in pure love, in Aramaic, Brachma. Michael is the author of the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? For more information about the forgiveness process, please visit www.whyagain.org. And now, welcome to the show, Mind Shifters Radio.
Hello and welcome to Mind Shifters Radio. I'm Tim Hayes. I'm your host for the first hour. And today is Wednesday, June 9th, 2021. As always, we're grateful to everyone who's joining us here today, whether you're listening live or through the archives, as we spend another couple of hours teaching and supporting people in using some of the most powerful, effective, efficient, and accessible tools I've ever encountered. These tools are available absolutely free at whyagain.org. If you go to that website, click on the link in the upper left-hand corner that says Start Here. It will take you to a page where you can download and read Chapter 24 of Dr. Michael Rice's book. The book is titled, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And that chapter of that book provides a narrative description of the primary tool in this body of work. That tool is called the Reality Management Worksheet, sometimes called the Reality Management Wake-Up Sheet. It's a tool I've been using for to great advantage in my life for over 17 years to improve the quality of my life and relationships and help me turn any emotional state into part of the infallible guidance system that each of us have been given. You can also click on a link and download the PDF file of that tool itself. Completely free. Print it off and use it as often as you'd like. You can also go to your app store and type in the three words Heartland Aramaic Forgiveness. And by the time you're done typing the word forgiveness, you'll see the glowing heart icon. If you click on that, it'll let you download a completely free and private app that contains the Reality Management Worksheet, an abbreviated version of that worksheet process, and a copy of the Dragon Klingon game, which is a wonderful way to introduce these tools to even younger audiences. Also on that page is a link that will let you download a whole host of audio files of shows just like this one where people have been stepped through that worksheet process. They can serve as a tutorial for you. And with, you know, your own practice and repeated listenings, that's all you need to become a master of the application of this tool in your life. And if you're like most people, if you do that, you will see profoundly positive benefits. You can also give us a call or send us an email if you have a comment or a question. If you're listening through the archives, you can email Jeannie at jeannie@whyagain.org. And you can email me at mindshifters-academy.org. And we hope you do that because it raises questions. And if you have a question for us and you're listening live, our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, it'll put a little question mark by your phone number, and I'll announce you by your area code, and we can have a conversation. This year we're doing the Course in Miracles lessons through the workbook. Today is the 160th day of the year, so lesson 160 in the workbook reads, I am at home. Fear is the stranger here. The commentary reads, fear is a stranger to the ways of love. Identify with fear and you will be a stranger to yourself. And thus you are unknown to you. What is your true self remains an alien to the part of you which thinks that it is real but different from yourself. Who could be sane in such a circumstance? Who but a madman could believe that he is what he is not and judge against himself? There is a stranger in our midst who comes from an idea so foreign to the truth. He speaks a different language, looks upon the world truth does not know, and understands what truth regards as senseless. Stranger, yet he does not recognize to whom he comes, and yet maintains his home belongs to him while he is alien now who is at home. And yet how easy it would be to say, this is my home. Here I belong, and I will not leave because a madman says I must. What reason is there for not saying this? What could the reason be except that you had asked this stranger to take your place and let you be a stranger to yourself? No one would let himself be dispossessed so needlessly unless he thought there were another home more suited to his tastes. Who is the stranger? Is it fear or you who are unsuited to be home, to be the home which God provided to his son? Is his fear his own, created in his likeness? Is it fear that love completes and is completed by? There is no home that can shelter love and fear. They cannot coexist. If you are real, then fear must be illusion. And if fear is real, then you do not exist at all. How simply then the question is resolved. Who fears has but denied himself and said, I am the stranger here. And so I leave my home to one more like me than myself and give him all I thought belonged to me. Now is that person exiled out of necessity, not knowing who he is, uncertain of all things but this, certain that he is not himself and that his home has been denied to him. What does he search for now? What could he possibly find? A stranger to himself can find no home wherever he may look, for he has made return impossible. His way is lost, except a miracle will search him out and show him that he is no stranger now. The miracle will come, for in his home his true self remains. It asked no stranger in, and it took no alien thought to be itself. And it will call its own back to itself in recognition of what is its own. Who is the stranger? Is he not the one of that yourself, your higher self, calls not? You are unable now to recognize this stranger in your midst, for you have given him your rightful place. Yet is your true self as certain of its own as the Creator is of its offspring? He cannot be confused about creation. He is sure of what belongs to him, and no stranger can be interposed between his knowledge and his son's reality. He does not know of strangers. He is certain of his offspring. The Creator's certainty suffices. Whom he knows to be his offspring belongs where he set him, where he has set his offspring forever. He has answered you who ask, who is the stranger? Here the Creator's voice will assure you, quietly and sure, that you are not a stranger to your Creator, nor is your Creator stranger made to you. Whom God has joined, remain forever one, and at home in him, and no stranger to himself. Today we offer thanks to the Christ mind that has come to search for the world that for what belongs to him. His vision sees no strangers. His vision only beholds his own and joyously unites with them. They see him as a stranger, for they do not recognize themselves. Yet as they give him welcome, they remember. And he, leads them gently home again where they belong. Not one does the Christ mind forget. Not one he fails to give you to remember, that your home may be complete and perfect as it was established. He has not forgotten you, but you will not remember him until you look on all as he does. The person who denies his brother is denying the Creator, and thus refusing to accept the gift of true sight by which his higher self is clearly recognized, his home remembered, and his salvation come. So that's the lesson for today in the commentary and our Course in Miracles experiment with Pam Grout. Lesson 160 is titled, What the Bananas? She quotes Florence Scovel Shinn as saying, infinite intelligence is ever ready to carry out man's smallest or greatest demands. Pam writes, I have inadvertently become a PR person for the universe. The perks, as you can imagine, are many, but the best thing about this job is that my, quote, employer, close quotes, if you want to call this universal love energy my boss, my employer doesn't ask that I pimp some useless product or lower my standards or pretend to believe in something I don't see proof of every single day. The universe is not trying to sell anything. All it wants to do is give, and give, and give some more. My job as one of its primary press agents is to let the world know that we are loved unconditionally, always, without exception, no matter what. I'm in charge, if you will, of publicizing the fact that the universe is trying like bloody hell to interact with me and you and everybody else. As lesson 160 that reads, I am at home. Fear is the stranger here. As this tells me, the universe wants nothing more than to bless me, to guide me, to help me create the most exciting version of myself possible. And here's the cool part. Not one thing is required of me for this to happen. I don't have to earn its favor or send in a coupon. I just have to release the reality that I read about in the news. I have to make space in my consciousness for the universe to get in. I just have to quit fighting life and let it be. The old reality is as passé as the bump. It's a dance for those of you who missed the disco days. It's defective and it's causing us to miss the most freaking amazing things. The old reality is wrong, is a lie, is fake. It's defective. And as I believe it, it makes us miss unfolding in, through, as, and around us. So that's lesson 160 today and the commentary. And we have 45 minutes to talk, to share, to entertain questions or comments. Our call-in number is 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. What is on your mind? How can we support you today? We have one person in the chat room, and we have 6 callers and lots of time to talk. We had our support group last night, and we watched The Wisdom of Trauma, which is a documentary movie focusing on the work of Dr. Gabor Maté, or Maté, I don't know how to pronounce that, but G-A-B-O-R is his first name, and M-A-T-E is his second name. And he is quite the promoter of practical, research-based, humanistic approaches to help people with trauma and addictions. And he has devoted his life to working in some of the most dire circumstances with people that are racked with suffering and using various substances and behaviors to try and numb themselves out from that addiction process, or the pain underlying the addiction, the pain that comes from trauma. So it was a pretty intense hour and a half documentary, and it certainly stirred up a lot of things for a lot of people. And yet it's another good reminder of the same basic model of working with people that Dr. Michael Rice presents here for the Mind Shifters Radio audience and in his intensives and support groups. Pretty much exactly the same model as Byron Katie, who recognizes that she only suffers when she believes her negative thoughts. Pretty much the same model as Diedrich Wolsack with his Choose Again six-step forgiveness process. And so many others who have tapped into probably a lot of the same source material to understand that life events happen, and yet those life events happening do not create our experience of those life events. It is our choice of what to focus on and how to interpret it and what we pour our mind energy into which creates our experience of life moment to moment. At one point in the movie, he's talking to Tim Ferriss, and he asks Tim to think about something that Tim used to create upset in his life recently. And Tim said, well, I've got one. I went away and I had hired this person to come and do a bunch of, you know, repairs and chores around my house while I was gone. I came back and none of it was done. And Gabor asked him to think about what he made that mean. I guess he asked him what emotion he felt, and he felt disappointment. And Gabor said, okay, so that's sadness. Disappointment is sadness. And then he asked him what he made it mean. Why, you know, would somebody not do that? Well, they don't respect the person. They don't think they're valuable. They don't think they're worthy. And so then Gabor asked him, okay, so what kind of person gets treated as though they're not valuable and they don't deserve respect and they're not worthy? And Tim Perry says, well, somebody who isn't valuable, who isn't worthy. And then Gabor said, now, are there any other possible explanations for why this repair person didn't do the work that you wanted him to do while you were gone? And Tim says, well, it might have been that he got stuck at an airport, or that he was, you know, had some other thing waylay him. And Gabor said, or he's got attention deficit disorder. And they listed several other things that might have been going on in that person's life that have nothing to do with Tim Ferriss. And then Gabor said, now, notice out of all those options we just named, notice the one you chose. And then Gabor said, truly, you didn't choose it. Your mind handed it to you. And it's the worst possible one, and it's all about you. And then you pour your mind energy into that, and you create this belief that this person is disrespecting you, and that this person holds a negative view of you as being not worthy of respect and not a good person and not valuable, etc. That's what we do on a regular basis. We are creating our experience of life. Tim Ferriss didn't create that person not showing up. Tim Ferriss created what he made it mean to him.
That's why. And if I don't
area
know
code
who's
901.
Calling me, if I don't know who's texting me,
The hand went up temporarily, so I thought that was somebody that wanted to make a comment. So our calling number is 563-999-3581, and we have plenty of time for conversation or question or answer. And if you don't know Gabor Mate's work and you want to look into it, he has got all kinds of YouTube videos. He has a book titled something about ghosts. It's going to come to me here in a minute. I'm looking up in my library. It has the In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, Close Encounters with Addiction. It's quite a long book. If you're listening to it on Audible, it's 15 hours worth plus, and it's a landmark book in terms of treatment addictions and harm reduction, and they talk about a system of dealing with people who struggle with addiction that's focused on harm reduction rather than punishment and criminalization of addictive substances, et cetera. And it's been part of a movement to revolutionize the way we work either in towns or states or nationally with our government, the way we work with people who are in so much pain that they get involved in an addictive process to numb themselves from the pain. And the pain most often comes from early life trauma. It doesn't have to be early, but most often it's a lot of early life trauma. And so if you want to look into that, he has a number of books. The one that was the core of the documentary that we watched last night with the support group was In the Realm of Hungry Ghosts, Close Encounters with Addiction. So what's on your mind? What would serve you for spending the next 35 minutes? How can we support you in either finding out more about what these tools are that we offer and or how to apply them effectively in your life to improve your life? 563-999-3581. And if you call that number and press 1, we can have a conversation. I was pleased to see that several people that I've been dealing with recently are making lots of headway in terms of understanding that they are the ones creating their emotions. And I had somebody come in last night for a session who was completely convinced just 3 weeks ago that the outside events in his life were causing his upset. And then, of course, what that means is he's a victim and he's helpless. And we were trying to help him understand that while the outside events are there, they're as he describes them, he was feeling some pressure to do something and he wanted to please certain people in his life, and he wanted to avoid judgment from other people in his life. So he made a decision rather with intense emotions and hastily, and soon after he made the decision, he regretted it. And now he's, you know, basically living with a very expensive decision, and he has possession of this house and property, and now he's miserable. And he thinks he's miserable because of the condition of the house or its location or what accoutrements it has or doesn't have. And I kept trying to work with him to understand he's not miserable because of the house or its location or its accoutrements or the screen missing on a window or the holes in other screens or the loose board on a deck. That's not causing his upset. And he was pushing back rather strongly, rather heavily. And I kept asking him, okay, so how do you think about yourself? He said, well, I had a lapse in judgment. I had a serious lapse in judgment. And he had this energy dripping off his words when he said a serious lapse in judgment. And so I asked him, okay, let's use your words and ask you, when in the recent or distant past have you or somebody that had authority over you done what you thought was a serious lapse in judgment that had a powerful impact on you? And he was fighting me tooth and nail. He didn't want to go back and look at anything in the past. He wanted to focus on the details of this house and what it was missing and what was damaged and why it wasn't good and how much he had to pay for it. And I just gently kept pursuing. Okay, but let me just ask you, how are you thinking about yourself relative to having made this decision, which you're now labeling a serious lapse in judgment? And he said, well, I'm just ripping myself apart. And he said it with that venom, that intense emotion in his words. And I said, that's it exactly. The reason you're in the physical pain you're in, the emotional pain you're in, the tearful episodes you're having, is because you are viciously beating yourself up in your judgment of yourself for having made this decision, which you're now calling a serious lapse in judgment. And he went on about how could I have done this? And I said, it's very simple, actually. Whenever I load a goal in my mind that doesn't get met, and that goal happens to be connected in my mind to pain or fear or guilt or shame or rage, when those energies get activated in my mind, it literally distorts my vision. It literally changes my perception. And he said, yeah, that's it. I looked at this house. Some part of me refused to see all of these things. And then as soon as we took possession, I went and I started looking around. I saw all these things and I thought, how could I have not seen this? And I said, it's very simple. Whenever I have an intense negative emotion active in my mind, it distorts my perception. Perception, as we talk about in this work, is a very active process. There's nothing passive about it. I don't just open my eyes and then instantly see whatever is there to be seen. My goals, my wishes, one of the lines in Course in Miracles says, we must come to understand the distorting power of the way we want things to be. So he wanted this to be a great house. He wanted this to be a done deal. He wanted to move out of the other place he was in. He wanted to be, you know, pick your poison. He wanted to be viewed as a shrewd real estate person. He wanted to, you know, please his wife. He wanted to please his friends and coworkers, whatever it is. And because of that, those goals, getting met or not getting met, were resonating all of these intense emotions. And when they got activated, they literally distorted his perception. He literally could not see what was right there to be seen. And as I say that, I'm aware that that's the title of a chapter in a book that you can find on a CIA website. If you search for CIA and perception and creating perception, there's a title of there's a chapter of a book that's titled "Why Can't We See What Is There to Be Seen?" And the answer to it is, if we have strong emotions resonated, they distort the mechanism within us that actually creates perception. And if you want to get more information about that, you can go to YouTube and type in the name Anil Seth, A-N-I-L, Seth, S-E-T-H. And if it doesn't come up right away, type in perception or hallucinating perception. And there's several very direct TED Talks about the science of perception and about how actively we create the pictures our mind shows us. We screen out certain details. We add others. We distort others. And there's no doubt about it. The science is in. It's very hard evidence. So when I want something to be a certain way, my mind will serve up evidence that it is that way. Trick is, it doesn't last. That evidence doesn't hold up to scrutiny after my emotions have diffused and my clarity of perception has been restored. The good news is, if I can let myself see the truth, it becomes empowering. It might be a bit of a wake-up call at first because I might have such a well-practiced pattern of blaming others, and it might feel a little awkward to understand that I'm actually the one creating the very pain that I say I don't want to experience. And yet, if it's true and I wake up to the realization that it is my process of mind that's actually causing the pain that I don't want to experience, then I've got direct access to what's causing the pain, and I can choose again, as the Course in Miracles asks us to do so often. So a little crack in the armor when I was working with this person, because he heard himself say that he is furious with himself for having made this lapse in judgment. And then he was able to see how the anger he's experiencing that he says is about his lapse in judgment is directly related to a lot of this tension and these tears and this overwhelm. And so as we introduce some tools to help him get clear about the pain, fear, or sadness that's most likely underlying that rage, we're giving him the tools to access and dismantle the stuff that he says he doesn't want, despite the fact that unwittingly he was an active participant in creating it. And that's what we offer in these tools. The primary tool is the Reality Management Worksheet, and we encourage people to use it soon and often. The first three steps of the worksheet, I simply outline for myself what my conscious logical mind is doing to create the distortion in perception. And I learn to recognize that if I'm in any kind of physical, mental, or emotional pain, it's there not to punish me, it's there to serve me as an alarm system, as a wake-up call, as a call to attention, to change the focus of my awareness, and to make changes in whatever areas I have access to control. And as I do that, with knowledge of how the system works, and how when I pour mind energy and emotional energy into certain thought patterns, that's what creates a strengthening of the resonant energy and the actual physical sensations within me. The energies that we call the physical energies, the neuropeptides, the stress hormones, etc. And if I'm aware that whatever energy, mind energy I pour into certain thought patterns is responsible for that and my experience of those energies, neuropeptides, stress hormones, tensions, then I can shift the focus of my thoughts or what I'm going to pour my mind energy into. And lo and behold, most everybody who's picked up the tool, the reality management worksheet, and applied it, and done enough of them to get some success, lo and behold, we understand that it's entirely possible to change my emotional state dramatically, even when nothing that my mind was telling me is causing the upset has changed at all. So these tools are liberating. These tools are powerfully effective. These tools are there to help enhance our quality of life, and they're available absolutely free. So what's your comment? What's your question? What's your answer? What's your soliloquy? We have time. We have 21 or 22 minutes left. 563-999-3581. One of the fascinating things about the documentary last night was that Dr. Matei was talking about how many physical ailments our current medical model treats with steroids. And these steroids are essentially stress hormones, distilled, concentrated stress hormones. They do what our stress hormones do. So it's mind-boggling to realize that the vast majority of inflammatory problems, irritable bowel syndrome and asthma and bronchitis and all these different things that they treat with steroids, is they're treating stress response patterns with stress hormones. So rather than looking at the underlying cause of all the stress, they just keep pouring synthetic or knockoff stress hormones into the human energy system to numb it out from the symptoms or effects of creating mental emotional stress over a prolonged period of time. Area code 910, you're in the air.
Hey, Dr. Tim, it's Jill from Wilmington.
Welcome, Jill.
You invited people with soliloquies, so I thought I would call. I have a story, a healing story, and I thought I would share because it does definitely relate to the tools and also this this film that you're talking about. I watched it yesterday, too. I'll try to keep it somewhat brief, but my dad has been sick. And he's back in the hospital, but I was not supposed to know about this. This is kind of a secret that I accidentally found out. And I called and talked to him on Monday. That was his birthday. And we had the most inauthentic, kind of ridiculous conversation because I know he's in the hospital, but I'm saying, happy birthday, and what are you going to do, and are you having fun? And he's just kind of going along with it. And I was furious rage was kind of building up in me. And so even the next day, I was just angry. And I could feel it crackling in my energy field. And I could also feel, it was, you know, the trauma response where we go up into the fight or flight and then, you know, hopefully resolve it. Well, I could feel myself going up into fight and then cutting off the resolution, you know, reasons why I can't say these words or I shouldn't feel this way. So I knew that I needed some help, and I reached out to some areas, but I started watching this movie And even before that, I was somebody about, you know, what it boils down to is this lack of authenticity, you know, and no wonder I don't trust men, you know, and no wonder, and that lack of trust generalizes to so many people. But then weirdly, I will also trust untrustworthy people. Like, I kind of miss the cues that tell me don't trust this person, and I will place my trust into someone who then acts untrustworthy and reinforces my beliefs. So, you know, it's all curious, and it's this tangled up feeling that I had. So I'm watching the movie, and Gabor Mate, he's also child development is one of his specialties. He's got, you know, he's just brilliant. And he says that there are two things that humans need and children and babies need. It's non-negotiable. They need attachment, and they need authenticity. And I was blown away by that comment because I'm thinking, like, this is so silly. Like, what am I, you know, I can't be real. Like, that seems so corny. But when I heard him say that it is a non-negotiable need, it just kind of, it stunned me to think then that I'd never had authenticity with either one of my parents, probably. And what happens is the child who cannot be authentic disassociates from herself. And no wonder I ignored cues from my gut to say this person isn't trustworthy. No wonder I was so furious about not being able to be authentic with my dad and knowing that he was not authentic with me. And it really began to diffuse so much of that rage that was just unmanageable. And I was really, like, I had to be very careful not to lash out at, like, my partner, who is a man. And, you know, because I was in that frame of mind, all men are untrustworthy jerks, to put it mildly, he was an untrustworthy jerk. No, you know, and he's just innocently being who he is, which is not an untrustworthy jerk. But so that rage.
He was showing up that way in your mind.
Of course I saw him that way. I couldn't not see him that way because I was just in that fog of that illusion, which had a foundation, but it was my perception. And that comment from Dr. Mate just blew it all. But even further, the hospital social worker called me. And so the secret's out because now, you know, I know what's going on with my dad. And it gave me the opportunity to be authentic with him. And I could complete that cycle, which is a miracle. A true healing miracle. And that was all kind of accidental, the way it all happened. But I was so grateful too, because in my authentic conversation with my dad, I could say, we, your children, love you, and we want you to tell us what's going on so that we can make sure you're safe and comfortable and taken care of. And he could say, I made a mistake, but I did it out of love. And he could be authentic back with me. And that was something I didn't think I'd get. I was in the state of, like, that's it. I'm writing him off. I hate him. I don't want anything to do with this guy anymore. It's all his fault that I have had a miserable life. This is how dramatic it got. You know, terrible relationships, no trust, blah, 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 all that stuff. And in the space of a few hours, entire energy feels shifted from, like, spitting fire and rage to, like, complete acceptance and back to the love that I am, that I was so disconnected from, but then truly connected to.
You know, this is one of the more powerful examples of how the Course in Miracles keeps telling us, and the Way of Mastery tells us, even on the fifth page, we don't experience anything that we don't choose in one way or another. And your choice of perception was leading you to think, that's it. There's absolutely no safety, no possibility for connection. I'm out of here. I'm cutting this guy out of my life forever. When in reality, when you were able to reestablish the authenticity, which is that fundamental need for us, everything about your perception and everything about the potential for your life to turn out differently in the next breath, the next moment, changed dramatically.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There's the Course in Miracles and the Way of Mastery's lesson telling us we create the world we see. And that's a powerful example you just gave.
Yeah. Absolutely. And that world looks very real. You know, it appears so real. So having practiced this for a long time, I know now that there's something on the other side of it, even though I cannot see it in that moment. But I knew, I had the awareness, like when I was so angry, I knew I cannot take it out on my partner or my son. Like, I have to really be careful. And I even said to my son, speaking of being authentic, I told him, I just feel mad at your grandpa right now. And, so if I'm a little snappy with you, it's just because it's hard for me to regulate those feelings or something like that. But I wanted him to know that, how could he not pick up on my rageful attitude? Because it was there.
The words are failing me. But what I'm trying to let you understand is, as simple as it might seem to somebody who's watching from the outside or listening to you say that, that is super parenting. That is healthy parenting on steroids. Right? Sometimes people think, to be a good parent, I just have to never be upset. And that's just not true. Because if I'm never upset, then I never get an opportunity to teach my children how to handle their upset. And if I never show them that I'm upset, then they think they're the only ones that get upset. And then we can't model for them how to deal with their emotions. So it's not about never getting upset or angry. It's about explaining upsets and anger and fears and sadness and coaching our children about how to deal with these things, which are part of our life experience and can be extraordinarily beneficial. They can be really good sources of information for us. As I say in the intro these days, that the tools that are provided at whyagain.org allow me to turn any negative emotional experience I have into part of the infallible guidance system that we've all been gifted. So that is super parenting.
Well, congratulations. Thank you. It's something I have been learning. Thanks. He and I together have been learning and practicing that. And it takes awareness, obviously, for me to know, when I'm off center, to notice that I am, to understand what's provoking that, and then to open up my mouth and let him know, like, if you're picking up on this, you're right, but let me tell you what my upset is coming from, because it's not you.
Exactly. It's not about you.
Yeah. And that's, that's so important. I mean, I'm sure when I was a kid, and I think maybe all kids do this, they think it's them, you know, internalize the stuff, you know, it's my fault somehow. I was thinking too about the wisdom of our bodies, and that's part of, you know, the wisdom of trauma. And what I like so much about Gabor Mate is that it isn't, you know, trauma isn't like those big, huge events that we might think, you know, it is something as, you know, I'm going to say simple. It's not simple, but not being authentic or not having parents that are authentic. You know, I didn't have a traumatic childhood in the sense of great abuse or neglect or anything. But it's the wisdom, my body did that to survive. That was its best choice. And also, there's no one to blame because, you know, not blaming myself because it was an automatic response to a situation that would have been unbearable at the time. And I can also, I also know for sure that my father was certainly raised in a traumatic environment with, you know, he did not perpetrate the type of abuse on us that I think was perpetrated on him. So he was a traumatized kid and coming from that place. So no blame. Like there's, it just is. And once you know what it is, you can work with it. And there's so many important things to learn from it too.
Yeah, he makes it very clear in the documentary that everybody's doing the best they can. He doesn't go as far as to say, you know, with whatever resources they have in the moment, which is what I like to say, is that everybody's doing the best they can in each moment with whatever resources they have at that time. And, you know, great teachers throughout the centuries have said different things. I think it was Maya Angelou who said, you know, we do the best we can with what we know until we know we learn better, and then we do better.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody is just doing the best they can. Well, everybody has cross-generational patterns, strengths and weaknesses, successes and failures, abuses and triumphs that they inherit through their bloodline. Everybody. So how far back do you go before you say, okay, this person is the cause of it all? It's just not possible
right.
to say that.
Yeah.
So there's a lot about that documentary that was very useful. It was very intense for most of the group members last night, and we ended up offering some faster EFT tapping at the end to get people settled and let the energies flow and release resistance, et cetera. And so, you know, I suppose we should mention to people in case they're interested that I believe the, what was the name of it? The Wisdom of Trauma.
Yeah.
So if you go to wisdomoftrauma.com, they like to have donations. They like to have people pay for it. But there's a very well-done documentary on wisdom that focused on the work of Gabor Mate. I appreciate it. I should mention that, Jill, you were the one that turned me on to that yesterday. I had seen the notices for it but hadn't turned into it. But when you said that at one point in the documentary, what you heard sounded almost exactly like what the ancient Aramaic forgiveness says, and basically that it's the thoughts and interpretations we choose about what goes on around us that creates our upset and creates our experience of life. It's not the actual event itself.
Right. And also his comment was, and once you know that, once it's you and not the other person, you go from being the victim, you know, if it's somebody else doing something to you, you're a victim. But if it's you, then you're in control, and that's a very powerful position to be in. That absolutely made me think of the work that Dr. Rice and you teach, the Aramaic forgiveness.
Yeah, it's a very and if you go to YouTube and you look for it, you can find there's like a 2-hour talk where Gabor is talking with, he's on stage with Diedrich Wolsack that we've mentioned before.
Oh, wow. And they're
doing a presentation at a seminar, and their work is very, very similar, and oddly enough, their life experiences were very similar. They were both, born into prisoner camps and you know, severe physical abuse and isolation, neglect, et cetera. So in their early years, both those men, Diedrich Wolsack and Gabor Maté, are products of not having their fundamental emotional needs met very well in their early years. And they both spent a lot of time adjusting to that, coping with that, sublimating those energies, trying to create ways to hold their mental emotional states together, in spite of having serious, sometimes physical, but all mostly mental emotional trauma in their formative years. And both of them are so honest about that and have worked on themselves with the tools that they've encountered, and so that, to my eye and ear, lends a great deal of credibility to their work. And the fact that their work is so similar to the Reality Management Worksheet and the Ancient Aramaic Forgiveness and what Course in Miracles promotes, you know, basically, Diedrich Wolsack's work developed out of his personal life and studying Course in Miracles as a way to turn himself around from being basically suicidal at age 50.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways to get access to both Gabor Maté's work and Diedrich Wolsack's work without having to pay money, so I'm perfectly comfortable talking about that here.
Yeah, I think Gabor Maté anyway has probably plenty of YouTube videos, and I actually first heard of him on a podcast with Russell Brand, I think is the guy, at the time.
And they had excerpts of that in the documentary.
Yeah, they did. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so it is, Aramaic forgiveness, I think, was my first window into this type of work, you know, and the idea that my perceptions might not be very accurate. You know, they're based on my experience and the hopefulness of the fact that you can untangle these thoughts and these beliefs. You know, and I mentioned that I felt tangled up yesterday, and I truly did, but, you know, and I know that forgiveness, to forgive means to cut or undo, right, in Aramaic, so I like that image. I didn't like it at the time when I felt like a tangled up ball of yarn, but, you know, it seems impossible. I look at this thing, and it's knots, and it's just like, how ever will I undo this? And the hopefulness is that you can, and it does take a long time. Dr. Rice used to be very daunting to me when he would say, you know, people do this for 10 years and they just start to get it. And I think, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can hang in for that long, but there's relief along the way. You know, you don't have to do the 10 years and suddenly the sun comes out, you know, it happens over time. And I have been working on this particular thing in one way or another for a few years. And yesterday I pulled apart a really big chunk of it. So that's the hope, you know, and the positive message for all of this is that it can be done. What seems impossible can actually be done.
Yeah, that's a delightful thing to hear. I greatly appreciate your calling with that testimonial, and I would echo for people that you have been doing this work. You have been exposed to this work for, I think Michael originally would say, at least 5 years, and sometimes 5 to 10
mm-hmm.
years before people really start to get it. And if I'm not mistaken, you're pretty much at that 5 year mark since one of the first times you called in and did a worksheet live on the air and gave that gift to yourself and others. And I appreciate the testimonial that it continues to show the benefits of your effort and the power of the tools when they are actively applied.
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, yep, I think I am right at that 5 year mark too. So keep going. Anyone who's listening and feels worried about the long time frame, keep going.
Sweet.
Welcome, Dr. Michael Rice and Jeannie.
Thank you.
Thank you. Good job, Jill.
Thanks.
Layer by layer, here a little, there a little, with stammering lips and other tongues as you speak to us.
Yay. So welcome, everybody, to the second hour of Mind Shifters Radio. Today is Wednesday, June the 9th, 2021, and our calling number is 563-999-3581, and press 1, and that puts you into queue. Jill, are you complete, or can we support you still?
I think I'm complete. Thank you for asking.
All right. Well, then I'll just say welcome, Michael.
Well, thank you, dear heart, and that quote that I just provided actually is a quote that comes from the ancient scriptures and in my new book, The End of Suffering. The character that Yeshua is speaking to, the book is written in a similar format to Why Is This Happening to Me Again, where I'm speaking to a character, only this time Yeshua is speaking to a character. And the character says, well, why would God do that to us? With stammering lips and another tongue will he speak to us? And Yeshua corrects the statement and talks about how that's simply projection. And he gives the truth about the way it works. And he says, with stammering ears and another brain do we listen. It's our listening. It's not the Creator speaking. It's we who've gone off in some fantasy land and, you know, realizing more and more. And as you mentioned, Tim, 5 to 10 years, well, I've been at this almost a little better than 50 now, just past the 50 mark, and it's really anchoring for me on a whole new level that 99.999% of the time, 99.999% of people are living in a fantasy, are living in something that bears no resemblance whatsoever to reality, and they try to move into what bears no resemblance to actuality. They're living in realities that bear no resemblance to actuality. They're living in the context of their own hallucinated issues projected into their brain's image of everyone else. And, you know, here we are thinking that it's the Creator speaking to us with stammering lips and another tongue. The Creator has always spoken the language of active present love. But when we decide to go into speaking the language of hostility or fear and live in our hallucinations, then it's our ears that are foreign, our ears that can't capture the voice that love is presenting and the message that love is presenting. So it's a big step to recognize, literally, and I've mentioned this the last couple of days, that line in the lesson, What is the World?, where the Course says, perception is a world made up by you to take the place of what the Creator gave you in creation. So the Creator has always given a pure, straightforward message based in love. And when we decide to live in a world and hallucination of hostility and fear and blame and guilt and abandonment and all that stuff, we moved into foreign ears and foreign listening. The Creator's voice has always been crisp and straightforward and clear and will never change. But of course, in the scriptures there, as many times they do, they play the game of projection. Why would God do that to us? Now it's we who are listening with foreign ears, and when we let loose, when we forgive, literally the hostility and fear-based mind, the judgmental mind, the mind that says, you really have a problem. I'm doing just fine. It's you that has a problem. Then we're listening with those stammering ears and listening in another tongue, trying to make sense of a very clear message. Well, the clear message is the truth about you is you were conceived in love. You were created of love, and that's just what is. Everything else is a fantasy. But when our fantasies get really serious in our minds, we have to have somebody to blame and tell them what they should be doing in order to correct what's happening in my mind. And, of course, we give other people the advice that that we need to follow. You know, the turnaround on the worksheet in codependence to interdependence is, so you make a list of your advice to everybody else, and then you choose to apply that advice to them in your life. And when you do that, you find out you're a master at giving advice. So follow your own advice, and there you go. You will be right on track. Try to force others to follow your advice and manipulate them into believing that your reality is true about them and they don't know what they're thinking. Well, you know, that leads to all kinds of crazy hallucinations and all kinds of splits in relationship and every kind of insanity going on in the world today. We just did a session this weekend. We've talked about that the last couple of days on responsibility communication. And what I'm realizing more and more is that when we step into responsibility communication, we're bypassing the hallucination to the mind. We're bypassing the hallucination that you made me and actually taking responsibility for, oh, here's what I'm experiencing. And when I realize and I speak to myself honestly about what I'm experiencing instead of playing that game that somebody else is the problem in my life, then I get to approach my own hallucinations, my own projections of hostility and fear. I get to dissolve them, and I get to confront the truth in my mind directly. And that can be a major confrontation with oneself. And so we invite you to go into the confrontation, because when you do it, and you do it with a mind that brings love, conscious, active, and present, rather than the hostility and fear mind, the blame mind, the mind that tells everybody else that there's a problem in your life, you do it with a mind of actual present love, and you go to the truth of what's stored in you, and you tell the truth about it, all the pain and the drama behind it dissipates and disappears. And then you have an instrument called the body-mind unit that is fit to incarnate love. And human life begins. So we're here to support human life in the world. We're here to recognize that who we are is active present love and to live out of that active present love. And recognize that whenever we want to blame somebody else and tell them what's wrong with them, we're in projection. We're in denial, dissociation, projection, and hallucination. And you know, it's just time to clean up our minds. So welcome to the club of those who are interested in at least approaching the truth, being responsible, learning responsibility language, and cleaning up one's own mind. It's an awesome thing to do. And, of course, we've been talking to this character, Richard, about that process in the book, Why Is This Happening to Me Again? And the book goes back to, written between 1985 and 1995, probably 1980 and 1995, was the writing time on why is this happening to me again. And it would be written much differently were I to write it today, although the basic principles, it's as I'm rereading it every day on the in the class, in the radio show, I'm pleasantly surprised at how on track it is, and, of course, that there are still refinements to be made. So we're in a chapter on that's entitled Off the Mark. We're on page 78 if you're reading along with us. And the book is my conversation with a character named Richard, who has no idea that he's responsible for anything in his life. He lives in the blame game. It's everybody else. And, you know, he's on his third divorce and knows all he has to do is get out of Dodge, away from those women that are the problem in his life, and then everything will be fine. And he's starting to confront the fact that his mind is a liar, that his mind tells him things that aren't true. And he's starting to move between grief and loss and sadness and fear around confronting that part of his mind, and acceptance and excitement about, wow, how different will life be if I choose to step up to the plate and actually live a life of responsibility. So Richard has been, just a paragraph before when we finished yesterday, I can hear myself making excuses for my diseases. I caught the latest bug. I couldn't possibly be anything I've done. Richard kind of reflected here with tongue in cheek. My response to him is, seriously, I think I'm ready to hear, or pardon me, his response to me next is, seriously, I think I'm ready to hear what you're saying. He said as he paused and contemplated how to put his newfound insights into words. See if this fits. I'm the one who has been there every time I've experienced anger, fear, or guilt, and we could add blame, drama, whatever, advising others to what they should be doing, recognizing or denying that that's what we should be doing ourselves. And he goes on and says, so I'm the only one who's there. I cannot feel those things unless they're inside of me. Got it. And if they're there, they're a burden to my system. They are my disease. As he spoke, his hands were animated, as animated as his face. He was obviously delighted with the depth of his understanding. The man sitting beside me now looked much lighter and more relaxed than the one who arrived earlier in the day. The way you present spiritual teachings, Michael, makes them sound simple, straightforward, and workable. They seem almost necessary to life, he said with surprise. It never occurred to me that spirituality was so fundamental to living. I rejected spirituality and religion totally due to the bitterness of my early experiences. It seems like I've been carrying the burden of rejecting my religion for an eternity. No wonder I'm exhausted. For years, without knowing what I was doing, I've been hiding a lot of pain, hiding it from myself as I bought into the label of me being a sinner. It sounds like it's time for me to forgive my distorted realities about religion. The sincerity in Richard's voice indicated to me that a profound shift was happening in him, perhaps the most important one in his life. And that finishes that chapter. There's a key thought that closes the chapter up completely, and the key thought is truth is always safe. Not sometimes, not most of the time, but all the time. And so with this work, we're looking, you know, the number one character trait that we're looking to develop is the willingness to honor truth and to recognize that when I'm in pain and upset, I'm in error, and that my mind can easily project it and say, well, I'm only in pain. I'm only an upset. I'm only kicking you out of my life. I'm only leaving because of what you did, which is the biggest lie that anybody's ever told themselves or anybody else. The only reason you're leaving, the only reason you're kicking and screaming, the only reason you're blaming somebody else is because something's been resonated in you that you don't want to deal with. And, you know, most everybody wants to run away from that, even the experts. When the going gets tough, the tough go shopping. Hey, I'm out of here. I don't want to deal with it. And so the invitation with this work is hang with it. Stay with it. And when you stay with it and you keep moving in the direction of bringing love present to whatever your disturbance is. Now, I know that your mind shows you a picture that the disturbance attached to someone else. And that's simply how the mind projects. If there's something I'm in denial of that I don't want to own, and the denial language looks like you made me, look at how you've upset me with what you did. I'm now in denial, and my brain is going to literally, I mean literally, hallucinate a whole world, a picture world, where you show up in my mind with my problem attached, and I swear it must be your problem because I can see it in my mind. Well, let's remind you for a moment that eyes have never seen. Eyes are not peepholes into the world. They are not windows. I know everybody believes they saw something outside of them. Scientifically, the truth is we can prove to you that you've never seen anything with your eyes, and you never will. Your brain, according to what's resonated in it by what happens in the world, sets up a thing, generates a thing called perception, the picture world that you see. And whatever pain is in that picture world is in your physiology. But when you say, and you made me, you're the reason I'm doing this or experiencing this, then you instruct your mind to generate a picture world that shows you that somebody else is the owner of what's going on inside of you. And literally, the content of brain cells will now be used to create a picture of somebody else. And they'll show up in our minds with our problem attached, and we'll swear that it must be their problem. When I have the tool and will actually use it to collapse that picture world, when I have responsibility communication and I tell the truth, I collapse the hallucinated picture world that shows me that you're the problem, and I get to start to approach the part of my mind that holds the pain or trauma that I'm experiencing. And then as I move into deeper and deeper layers and levels of responsibility language, I get to really be with that, which again is not Dr. Feelgood. But it is Dr. Healgood. Because when I can bring whatever my lies are to truth, you know, the Course talks about bring the world you do not want to the one you do. When I bring my lies to truth, the lies dissolve. My picture world changes, and I get to go, oh, that was about me. But as long as I'm in the communication mode of projection, and you did this, and when you did that, and you did that, and then you didn't do this, and you didn't do that, and you should have done this, and you should have done that, and I'm really upset because of all the things you didn't or did or should have done. It's all an hallucination. It's all a lie. Totally, completely a fabrication of the non-being mind, of carbon-based memory, taking its past and projecting to its brain's image of others. Remember that the world generally teaches projection as, you know, I take something that's inside of me and putting it outside of me. That's not projection. That's externalization. Projection is when I take something that's inside of me and I use it to make pictures of what I think is the outside world. And then I pretend those pictures are actually outside of me. I externalize them. And now, you see, I am void of problems and it's all your fault. liar, liar, pants on fire. You know, it's just time to be done with that world. And, you know, it consumes virtually every mind on the planet. That game of, you know, just tune in and listen to the news. And listen to the political rhetoric and how each one is, and you, and you, and you, and you. And the whole game is based on projection. You know, it's interesting. There were a couple of gentlemen who created a thing called the Civility Project back a few years ago. And they took their civility pledge to the 535 members of Congress and the 50 members of the, or the 50 governors of the 50 states. So 585 people, so-called leaders in our world, they invited them to make a commitment to civil discourse. And they spent, if I remember correctly, something like 2 years lobbying them to get this petition signed for civility. And in 2 years, they got exactly two politicians who said, yes, I will sign that. I will be civil. Two out of 585 leaders were willing to be with the truth. 583 said, don't make me look. I'm not going there. And when you think about that, it's amazing. I mean, what would our political world be like? What would our world be like if the first requirement to enter politics was you had to be human? You had to actually function as a human being. And what is a human being? Hold the newborn child, tap into the essence of that newborn, and you'll know exactly what a human being is. You will know that a human being is the presence of active love. What if, in order to enter Congress, the Senate, governorship of a state, you had to actually function as love? There would be truth in politics. We would start to create a world based on the truth of who we are as humans, based on love. What a strange idea. But how different would the game be? What if, in order to enter into a marriage, you had to be functioning as active, present love first? You know, people say, I love you. And by love, what they mean is, I want to do sexual athletics with you. And love has nothing whatsoever to do with the game at hand. That's why so many relationships today end up in divorce and insanity. What if we had to pass a profile, an evaluation, that said we were sane human beings before we married, before we entered into a job, before we entered into politics, before we entered into school? If that were the first training we had to have, how cool would that be? You know, we took this training into the prison system, and we cut recidivism by over 90%. And I don't remember what the recidivism, this was back in the 70s. I don't know what the recidivism rates were. They were up in the 70, 80%. Cut that by 90%. Just by inviting people to use the tools that would allow them to discover that they were human. To take these tools and put them to work, that's the objective. Right now, one of the best mechanisms for doing that, if you're interested in moving to the next level of your work, is we're just completing, this Sunday we'll complete what turned out to be a 17-week course entitled Codependence to Interdependence Communication Practicum. That course is now in the process of bundling it, and there'll be I'm not sure if you've calculated it out yet, sweetie, but something in the range of 84 to 88 or 90 hours of video self-study, all the tools, worksheets, process work, the discussions and conversations, question and answer sessions from two different intensives. It all becomes a self-study course that you can register for $600, and it gives you the whole package. And, of course, we have the radio show 5 days a week for support and answering questions. It'll be a self-study course. As I say, I'm not sure exactly how many hours it's going to be, but somewhere in the 80-plus range, between 80 and 90. Maybe even a couple more than 90, I'm not sure. Personal code evaluations included. Then, if you choose to, the next time we do that course live online as a Zoom course, you'll be able to just purchase the difference between the self-study course and the live course, and you'll be engaged in the live course. And once you engage in the live course, in any of the courses that we're doing, and it looks like we might be moving toward Laws of Living next. If you're interested, let us know. Once you've engaged in one of those intensives through Zoom, then from that point on, anytime you do that intensive, you'll be an invited guest for that intensive, so that you've got ongoing support from working with the tools and developing the brain cells for that particular piece of work. And, of course, the other end of the benefit, it's a win-win all the way around, is that anyone who's coming into the course new will have those mentors who've gone through the intensive once or twice or two or 10 times to be there to support them. So if you're interested in joining us for that, you have my cell number, you're welcome to call me, or you can drop a note to Jeannie. Her email is jeannie@whyagain.org. You're certainly welcome to join us, and delighted that you're here and part of this process that we do 5 days a week. Been doing for 10 years now, and just in deep appreciation for the audience, for the listening ears, for the support, for moving this forward on a global scale, for you passing along any shows that are particularly meaningful to you. At the end of the show, there's an archive on our website, whyagain.org. And so you can download or create a link to the archive of any given show and pass it along to somebody else. Invite somebody to listen to the
Michael.
Show with you. Yes, dear heart.
First of all, pull your microphone closer to your mouth. You're a little bit muffled. And then we do have a caller. That's
great.
Much better.
Well, let me throw in one more thing before we go to our caller, and that is that if you haven't used it yet, the app for the iPhone and for the Android system, Jeannie has just spent many hours with a technician in redoing both and adding the commitments, several different versions of the commitment to the app, and upgrading the app as well. So it's not quite uploaded yet. It might be another day or two. They thought they were going to have it uploaded today, but it's turning out that there have been some complications. Be patient with us, and within the next day or two or three, there'll be a whole new app. You can go in and update the app on your Android phone in the Play Store or in the App Store on the iPhone. So come join us. You can do the forgiveness process right there on your phone. You can engage in the commitment. You can print the commitments. You can do we've got the whole series, the commitment to myself, the commitment to someone else. I am somebody, the commitment for children. So please share it, pass it on, and let's make it available on a global scale. And let's say hello to our caller.
All right. It's area code 810. You are on the air. Who do we have?
Hi, this is Gail Grinke. I have been.
Well, young lady, we haven't heard your voice in a long time. Welcome.
Exactly.
How are things
and
in Michigan?
I'm calling. Good, hot. I'm just calling to thank you for all the work you've done. As you know, there were quite a few years when I was doing tons of worksheets and things around me were not happening the way I thought they should. And I'm
right.
like, these don't work anymore. And I quit doing them and I still went to Rex. And Rex had offered the gift of the Optimal Being program, I guess a year and a half ago. And
right.
I was like, well, I'm going to try it. So, and I'm doing worksheets again. I have made
All
a lot
right.
of progress. And I just wanted to tell you your work and what you do is awesome. And I never understood. I had read your book twice. And
right.
some of the things, and just like, I don't get it. You know what I mean? Well, let me tell you, I was in a really bad car accident 5 years ago. I had a close-head injury. I've made a lot of progress. I can talk now. I had to go to speech therapy. I'd have my left shoulder replaced, my left knee replaced, and I'm alive, and I'm very grateful, and I've made a lot of progress healing-wise. It was kind of funny, not funny, but 4 days after it, my mom was diagnosed with cancer, and she had to come live with us for 2 years. And you know how you talk about power person? And
yep.
obviously, my mom was my power person. And
right.
it became so clear when she lived here that I married my power person. And so, yeah, what
it's an
you
old
say
trick of the mind.
How you marry matching bags of garbage and how, you know, I definitely obviously was attracted to my power person. And it's just interesting because, you know, I have this closed head injury that, I mean, I still have some problems. Today's one of my better days, and I'm okay with it, okay?
Uh-oh.
Okay, because of the work I've done, I, to my husband, okay, than I used to. So... And I still have more work to do, but all I'm saying is you are spot on when you say that if you don't heal, you become your power person, because my husband really didn't like his father at all. And when his mother died, she said to me, whatever you do, don't let him treat you the way, you know, my husband treated me. And I'm like,
right.
Oh, he's totally different. That'll never happen. Denial is a strong thing. Because
yes.
at that time, I wasn't seeing the stuff. And, yeah, your work is so awesome. And obviously, I just wasn't ready for everything. You know, at the time I was doing it. So thank you again. And I'm still doing Mind Shifters and... Just when I think I'm healing a layer, another layer of the same thing comes up. So
yes.
you're spot on with everything. I just want you to know that, and I appreciate you, and I'm grateful for all the work that you do.
Fabulous. Well, when you talk about the power person and you know, the whole codependence dynamic, that's the course that we're just packaging up with about 80 some hours of self-study. So that might be the next level of approaching it and going through the next layer and cleaning it up. And so if that's appropriate, that fits. And how's Adam doing, by the way?
He's doing okay. He's working on himself also. He is going through the program. He hasn't totally finished it. I felt hungry for it when we got it, and I think I completed the whole thing in 2 or 3 months. It was harder for me because up until, and I'm going to say this just in case anybody's listening that's ever had a closed head injury. Interestingly enough, at the same time I did the Optimal Being program, I was tested because I hadn't been able to read, and the accident was 5 years ago. So, and I loved to read. That was something I loved. And I had gone through vision therapy, and whatever part of my brain was, I'm going to say affected, I couldn't read at all. And so it was great because I relearned to read, and now I can read 30 minutes at a time. So I would read, and then I'd have to wait because otherwise I'd get bad headaches. But so it took me a little longer than I wanted to get it done. But I finished it. So grateful, and I know a lot of it is with your work, and I just can't tell people enough how important it is to heal all my childhood wounds and stuff.
It is absolutely key. I'm with you, and I'm breathing with you too. Nice breath. That was awesome.
Yeah, well, I realized that I held my breath quite often. And that's another thing with doing the healing work. You know, I've had asthma since I was 12. And when I went to see the pulmonologist, I don't know, in the fall, he said to me, he goes, "This is just unbelievable." He said, "You're usually at your age," because I'm 68, "usually at your age, you're, you know, the breathing goes down." He said,
"Should be getting worse, and you're getting better.
At all."
Exactly. Oh my God, what are you doing?
Exactly. So there's another thing that just shows how much this work really does work.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. I'm with you 100%. I was almost dead the first year of my life 4 or 5 times from lung problems, and my lungs are 200% more efficient than they've ever been in my life. So
that is awesome.
The transformation of the tissue structure is simply a reflection of the work that's being done in what organizes or disorganizes the tissue structure, the disease processes. So nice work, and lady, congratulations.
Well, thanks. I owe it. Okay. I was going to say I owe it all to you, and I owe it to myself, too, because I'm doing the work. So
you stepped in and did it. Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Fabulous.
I look forward to start listening again and continuing to do what needs to be done to get better and better.
Fabulous. Well, thank you for saying thank you, and we hold the space, and any questions that come along, we're here to answer them.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Blessings. Take care.
Yes,
bye-bye.
Yes. Bye-bye.
Sweet.
So we've got 21 minutes, 563-999-3581, and press 1. Bob in the chat room says, "Healing the wounds of childhood is fundamental to wholeness, eh?"
For sure. Definitely key.
So if we can support you, press 1.
And our calling number, if you're on one of those stations where we can't see you, it's 563-999-3581. You call that number, you'll be listening to the show, and we'll look forward to having a conversation with you. 563-999-3581. We've got about 20 minutes or so, so there's lots of room for conversation. What's on your mind? How can we support you? And at this moment, sweetie, if we have no conversations, I've actually got a podcast interview that I need to do, and I have some more preparation. So I think we could, if there are no hands up, we could call the show at this point, and I'll go get ready for that podcast. And we'll just say, everybody, we appreciate you joining us, and join us again tomorrow. Create the best year yet of your eternal life. It's an awesome gift to give the world. Blessings.
Thank you for listening to Mind Shifters Radio with Dr. Michael Rice and myself, Jeannie Rice, and Dr. Tim Hayes and Michelle Pichet, as we present the first century Aramaic internal process of forgiveness. We are here for 2 hours every Monday through Friday from 12 noon to 2 o'clock Eastern Time on Mind Shifters Radio. For more information on Aramaic forgiveness, please visit www.whyagain.org. That's www.whyagain.org.